हरिः Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, so we were continuing with Shishupal's with glorification. Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Bereft of all good fortune, Shishupala spoke these and other insults. But the Supreme Lord said nothing, just as a lion ignores a jackal's cry. Upon hearing such intolerable blasphemy, the Lord, several members of the assembly covered their ears and walked out, angrily cursing the king of Chedi. Anyone who fails to immediately leave the place where he hears criticism of the Supreme Lord or his faithful devotee will certainly fall down, bereft of his pious credits. Then the sons of Pandu became furious, and together with the warriors of the Matsya, Kaikaya, Shrinjaya clans, they rose up from their seats with weapons poised, ready to kill Shishupal. Another option.
Yes.
Undaunted, Shishupal then took up his sword and shield in the midst of all the assembled kings, O Bharata, and hurled insult at those who sided with Lord Krishna. So everybody was getting...
What's going on?
How you could say, he was very liberal and equal in his distribution of insults, right? He was not... At that point, the Supreme Lord stood up and checked his devotees. He then angrily sent forth his razor-sharp disc and severed the head of his enemy as he was attacking. Footnote 14. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives insight into Krishna's heart. Then the Lord stood up. This was his intention. If I remain silent, then they will fight amongst each other and fill the sacrificial arena with blood. Even if I mount my chariot and with my troops engage in combat with him, the place will be soaked with blood. Either way, the sacrifice of my dearmost Yudhishthira will be destroyed. Reconciliation at this point is too difficult. Therefore, this must be done. Deciding this, he at that moment rose and cut off Shishupala's head in such a way that not even a drop of blood fell on the sacrificial arena. Sardartha Darshani, 10.74.43.
Right? Yes. It means that only blood exposed the sacrifice, but killing is okay.
But killing was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem with killing is that it creates the impure substance of blood that gets all over the place.
So that's the only problem.
Yeah, that's the problem. Just wanted to make it
messy.
Because it's a sacrifice. You don't want anything impure there, right? So you're trying to also, the consciousness is pure. But there everybody would have been dressed properly, bathed properly, wearing proper clothes and all that. So they would have all been pure for that. But here then Shishupal is getting out of hand, as is his nature.
Killing someone doesn't do anything to the consciousness of the General Assembly. It doesn't.
We're talking about Shishupal here.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's right. So it's not a problem.
No,
it's not a problem.
This is kings.
Yeah.
Draupadi's wedding, right? Then Arjuna wins, But the kings are upset because it's supposed to be amongst kings. So it would have been everyone would have, this is how they would look at it. One is they were going to naturally come forward, string the bow, hit the target, and you know, each and every one of them would have got Draupadi, right? But none of them was able to do it. Right? So naturally, since it's a Kshatriya thing, and there was no other king, so then they would have to either, that's it, nobody marries Draupadi, or set some other task, or Draupadi herself then would just go out and choose. Right? So then somebody would have ended up. But instead, he allowed a Brahmin to come forward and win.
Yes.
Right? So then they figured that this is nonsense. Why are they allowing Brahmins to take part in the Kshatriya thing?
Yes.
Right? Because one, they look at it that the Brahmins are in a lesser position because they don't have the prowess and everything like that. But at the same time, is they also, if they're smart, may look at it that they're more powerful, so naturally they could do these things. You know, so then if you allowed Brahmins to come to every Kshatriya program, then they would always win, and then there'd be no girls for the Kshatriyas. So they have to look out for the future of the whole thing here, right? You know, so then they go to fight with him. So there was going to be a whole war here. So he had his army already ready. It's not that they were out in the barracks. They're already there. So it's just a matter of, you know, because...
pulling the trigger.
And so then, because it's turning into a riot, because now they thought about it, that Draupadi Draupadi's the music, right? Draupadi. So he's now an in-law, right? He's a father-in-law, so therefore now he's family, so they can't just leave him there to himself, so Arjuna and Bhima come back, right? And so there's a lot going on at that time.
Yeah.
So when Kshatriyas do things like this, you know, some disagreement, some fight, and somebody dies, it's not a big deal. This is Kshatriya things, you know, like that. You know,
that's how we roll.
Yeah, so people die at the sacrifice. Yeah. You know, it's just the way. If Brahmins do, then that just doesn't happen. Mm. You know, then if Brahmins are doing, then sometimes you have, you know, demons dying. You know, because they come to bother the sacrifice and everything. So then they get killed and all that. But you try to arrange it so that they can't bother.
Yeah.
Like that. So it happens. Somehow or other, sacrifices are real, like a social, you know, central point of interaction. So
break some eggs to make an omelette.
Yeah, so it's, you know, yes, yeah, so it happens. You know. So I wouldn't worry about that. Yeah.
Okay.
Right?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. When Shishupal was thus killed, a great roar and howl went up from the crowd.
Yeah.
Taking advantage of that disturbance, the few kings who were supporters of Shishupal quickly left the assembly out of fear for their lives. Right? They took. Taking advantage of the that disturbance, right? Because otherwise, someone might notice. Yeah, so they thought, let's get out of here before anybody notices. And effulgent light rose from Shishupala's body. And as everyone watched, entered Lord Krishna, just like a meteor falling from the sky to the earth. Obsessed with hatred of Lord Krishna, throughout three lifetimes, Shishupala attained the Lord's transcendental nature. You know, so this is the third lifetime. So he's gotten pretty good at it by now, right? You know, up to this point. You know, before we said Hiranyakashipu is not really creating much of a. He's not insulting so much. Robin makes a few comments, but Shishupal now is, you know, he's
refined.
Three lifetimes, he's. Indeed, if we accept Shishupal's insult at face value, Krishna had no need to defend himself against such vitriol. His spectacular execution of Shishupal was refutation enough. Right, you know, so Shishupal said his stuff, and Krishna said his, and so it seemed to work out. Yeah. 39. Lord Hari personally sanctified Sri Draupadi's hair during the Rajasuya sacrifice and other special festivals. He would call Draupadi dear friend. He relieved her of fear at Atri's son, Durvasa. Fear of Atri's son, Durvasa, okay, and fear of others, including Dushasana. He removed all her sorrow. Narad Muni continues to praise not only the Pandavas, but their dearest associates as well. During the Rajasuya and other sacrifices with Krishna, Krishna with his own hand sprinkled Queen Draupadi's hair with water from the ritual vessel sanctified by mantras. He spoke to her with the affection reserved for intimate family members. He protected her in frightening situations involving Durvasa Muni, the temperamental son of Atri, and saved her from the shame of being disrobed by Dushasana in the royal assembly. Finally, Krishna relieved all her pain by destroying Dushasana and his friends at Kurukshetra. Right, so that would be the reason he's doing, right? It means you have the element of establishing dharma, so then you remove all the things that are improper. But the point is why are you making, why would Krishna make these arrangements so dharma goes better?
So they can think of the Lord.
So they can think of the Lord, okay. But now, how about if somebody's already thinking of the Lord?
Think more.
Okay. But that would be more. That would be the point of the whole thing, right? The point of establishing dharma is so that people can be devotees. So, if someone's practicing devotional service, that would be the more important element, right? So, therefore, establishing dharma by getting rid of the kings—that's one thing. Yeah. But more important would be the personal elements of, you know, getting rid of Dushasana and his brothers and all these other kings that were supporting Duryodhana, because they were all insulting Draupadi and the Pandavas. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that would be why he'd be personally interested. Because the material energy, she can take care of everybody because she's kind. Right? So she'll destroy them all. So it's not that he has to do it himself, right? He destroys everyone through time. So whether he personally gets involved or not, it will happen. So he gets personally involved when it's in connection with the devotees. Right? So that's the real thing for Krishna, right? So that's why these things are being pointed out, is that then the specialness of, you know, it's not amazing how many people got killed or how he established all these things, but it's the interaction that he has with the devotees. That's the specialness. Okay. It's the weather.
Yeah, the weather, the smog.
The smoke, you know, gets rid of the mucus.
Yeah, that's why I'm not coughing anywhere else. As soon as I come.
Okay. You can put something in the smoke, just some neem leaves or something. Eucalyptus, yeah. We used to put all kinds of things in there. So I would just sit in his hut and put all these things on, just sit there, you know, for a long time, just making all the smoke. Krishna relished Sri Vidura's porridge and organized the celebration of Sri Bhishma's passing away. Please, therefore, judge your own standing for how, in many controversies, both Vidura and Bhishma took your side. Right, so Vidura's porridge, right? Because Duryodhana was offering him, you know, meal for kings. But he'd rather go to Vidura's house than just have porridge. Right? Like that. So that's that very much annoyed Duryodhana. Right? And so therefore they can see the standing is that Krishna personally takes care of these, Vidura and Bhishma, and at the same time is then Vidura and Bhishma were on the Pandavas side. Right? So then you can see the, you know, connection there, how fortunate. Not only Krishna was benevolent towards the Pandavas, but his dearmost devotees as well. Sri Krishna was especially partial to Vidura and Bhishma. Even though Vidura was the son of a low-born Sudrani, Krishna happily shared Vidura's humble food, praising it as very tasty. And Krishna graced Bhishma with his presence as Bhishma was passing away on the battlefield. Dhyana means the soul's exit from the body. But as applied to a perfect transcendentalist like Bhishma, it also means merging into the existence of God. For devotees of the Lord, merging into his existence can only mean attaining a spiritual body and entering the eternal kingdom of Vaikuntha. Because Grandfather Bhishma saw Krishna before his eyes at the moment of death, Bhishma certainly achieved the Vaikuntha liberation deserved only by pure devotees. It appears then that Krishna highly favored Vidura and Bhishma even more than he favored the Pandavas. But here Narada corrects that popular misunderstanding. Why indeed were Vidura and Bhishma so dear to Krishna? Krishna was pleased with them not only because of their devotional service, which was not that exceptional, but mainly because they served the Pandavas, protecting them from Duryodhana and other enemies. Vidura and Bhishma earned high esteem in the opinion of the Lord by giving shelter and affection to the sons of Prita when they were helpless. This verse thus serves to demonstrate the superlative degree to which Vaishnav seva is pleasing to the Lord.
Nice.
41. Truly, the words spoken by the ordinary women of your city amaze me. Those words focused on Krishna and imbued with transcendental knowledge and devotion are praised in songs by accomplished poets. Everyone connected with the Pandavas, including their citizens, became scholarly and glorious. Generally speaking, the citizens of a state are virtuous when their rulers are virtuous. As Vyasadeva and other sages depict in their epics, everyone in Hastinapur, under the administration of Yudhishthira and his brothers, was saintly and learned. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the women standing on the roofs of Hastinapur spoke to one another while Krishna was passing on the road. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on their words as follows. Their conversation was attractive to all ears and minds. Sarva Shruti Manoharaha. Another meaning is, their conversation was attractive to all the Shruti scriptures. Since the words were the embodiment of the Upanishads, the Shrutis were happy with the conversation. So even the scriptures were very happy to hear what they had to say.
Yeah.
Sardartha Darshani, 1:10:20. The profound praise begins as follows. Here he is, the original personality of Godhead, as we definitely remember him. He alone existed before the manifested creation of the modes of nature. Right? Because the modes of nature means that then Mahatattva is manifest. And that's because there's time, and time is coming in his glance.
Yes.
Right? So therefore he's there before the modes of nature.
Yes.
Because the modes can't work without time, and he's time. So that, and in him only. Okay. He alone existed before the manifested creation of the modes of nature, and in him only, because he is the Supreme Lord, all living beings merge as if sleeping at night, their energy suspended. Right? So here is they're giving the whole creation thing. So he's there before the creation started, and all the living entities merge into him, you know, at night, you know, everything, all their energy being, everything suspended. So he's the one controlling the whole thing. So the living entities merge into him, and it's through his glance that everything, then the creation starts.
Yeah.
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that these words were spoken with reverence by the ladies in Shantarati. Then some women began to speak like Vaishnavas steeped in the devotional ecstasy of Madhura Rasa. O friend, the wives of Krishna who drink the nectar of his lips constantly must have worshipped. His lips constantly must have worshipped, certainly worshipped him by austerities, bathing in sacred places, and sacrifices in previous lives to attain their present status. But the women of Braja, whose minds were completely absorbed in that nectar, fainted in bliss simply because of remembering it. So the queens, then they're able to, how do you say, because of all of their austerities, then they're able to experience this.
Yes.
But the gopis, just by thinking of it, then they're fainting.
Yes.
So they're even more absorbed.
Yeah.
Srimad Bhagavatam 110.28. Krishna reciprocates with the women of Hastinapur by means of smiles and glances, to which Vishwanath comments. By his glances he pleased the women who had Shantarati, and by his smiles he pleased those with Madhurya Bhav. Sartartha Darshani 110.31. You'd have to be extremely expert to be able to accomplish this. And that's what's going on the roof.
Yes.
So Krishna's walking down on the ground through the crowd.
Yes.
So you have others there. So he's fitting all that in. So he's interacting with all the citizens according to their mood of surrender. Right? Since the Pandavas were the leaders of a community in which the ordinary people spoke like this, the Pandavas must have been exceptionally saintly. Right? So this is the citizens. Right? So if this is how the citizens are speaking, then you can understand, then the kings must be, you know, even more absorbed. Right? 42. When Prahlad, the son of Kayadhu, obtained the Supreme Lord's grace, he did so along with a grandson. The best of monkeys was favored alone. But you rare souls have received the complete love and mercy of the great Lord Hari with all your family members and subordinates. Right? So Prahlad with his grandson Balimara. Right? The best of monkeys was just Hanuman on his own. But here it's not only that they are getting, but also their family members and subordinates are all getting the Lord's mercy. So even
he'll be fine.
Okay. He'll survive. What's happening here? Here Narada confirms the assertions of Prahlad and Hanuman that the Pandavas are greater devotees. Other than Prahlad, the only pure devotee among Hiranyakashipu's descendants was Prahlad's grandson, Bali. Hanuman alone and his family received Lord Ramachandra's mercy, since Hanuman was a lifelong brahmachari and so had no offspring. The Pandavas, in contrast, shared Krishna's mercy with their entire family and entourage. According to one interpretation, Bantu in this verse means the Pandavas' sons, wives, and other relatives. You know what that be? I'm saying because you have Pandava, Bandava, right? So here, the Bandava does mean just Pandava, just means them. It means it's the friend. It means that's one. It means the friend.
That's me.
Right? Okay. But it also means everyone connected to them. Okay. Oh, so you're connected. So then you're getting the benefits. Okay. Okay. While Swajana means the ministers and residents of their capital. Or alternatively, Bandhu means the relations of the Pandavas by marriage, like King Drupad and King Virat. Swa means their blood relationships, including Duryodhana and his brothers, and Jana means their servants and citizens, right? So in different ways you can put it together. Yeah. But in any case, it's a lot of people, because they're all connected to them. Yeah. Either way, everyone associated with the Pandavas attained the mercy of Sri Krishna, the all-attractive source of all expansions of Godhead. 43. Once in the court of the Kauravas, with me and the other sages present, Krishna said of you, a friend of the Pandavas is my friend, and their enemy is my enemy. The Pandavas are my very life heirs. Whatever Krishna says must be absolutely true, especially what he says in the presence of pious sages like Narada. So by making this declaration in such a respectable forum, public forum, Krishna ensured that his feelings for the Pandavas would become well known throughout the world. Right? You know, because Duryodhana was supposed to kind of figure that, you know, you can't mess with Krishna, so then, you know, they shouldn't be messing either. Right?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, if Pandavas and Krishna were able to kill Jarasandha, which no one else could deal with, You know, he killed Kamsa, he killed all these demons. You know, and it's well seen how the Pandavas, there is no occasion where Karna ever got the upper hand with Arjuna. It's just not, he always, you know, trounced them very soundly. You know, it was a good fight, but it's because you escalated as the opponent. But he always won. And whether it was Karna alone or Karna supported by everybody else, it didn't matter. You know, there, and also then when the Kauravas came and tried to steal the cows of Virat, then Arjuna went out alone and defeated the whole army like that. So there's no occasion where, so one would think they would put it together.
Yes.
But they don't. That's called Maya.
That's right.
Yeah. Just as the five pranas maintain the spirit soul in a living body, the five Pandavas assisted Krishna's pastimes. And as the life air is very dear to the soul, the Pandavas were very dear to Krishna. Krishna therefore says in Mahabharata, Udyog Parva, 89-82, "He who hates the Pandavas hates me, and he who follows them follows me. Know that I am one in spirit with the righteous Pandavas." So therefore, if you can say practical for us, is then follow the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
These are the instructions to Arjuna. So then. And Krishna elsewhere says, "One should not eat the food of one who is hateful, nor should one feed a hateful person. You, O king, hate the Pandavas, and the Pandavas are my very life heirs." Right? So therefore, he can't eat with him, so he goes and eats with Vidura.
Yes.
Right.
Is that one shouldn't eat with, or shouldn't feed a hateful person?
Shouldn't feed a hateful person. One shouldn't eat from a hateful person, nor should one feed one.
Yeah. But you remember sometimes during the war, in Kurukshetra or even before, the enemies, they would afterwards eat together.
But they don't hate each other. Duryodhana hates everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But these other kings, they don't have it. Right? Anybody on his side he doesn't hate. You know, so they're cool. But on the other side is basically, there'll be some that are inimical towards the Pandavas, but they're not the ones that would go over and sit in their camp and...
So it was not Duryodhana?
No, not necessarily. Not that I know of. Duryodhana probably wouldn't go over. Because he wouldn't hang out with them when it wasn't war.
Yeah.
You know, the only time he was really being a good host was when he was arranging to poison Bhima. Then he's sitting and feeding him personally, and you know, like that. So that's. But otherwise, we just don't hear that they would even spend any time with the Pandavas.
Manu says something that you should invite your enemy and make him feel welcome.
No. It's if the enemy comes, you make him feel welcome and all that, and you deal in a friendly way.
Okay.
Yeah. You know. But you wouldn't go out of your way. So it's like if you're having a program, you don't invite those to your program that don't like you. You know, unless it's a political program, then you want them there because you want to see what they're doing.
Yeah.
And those you don't like?
And those you don't like.
You shouldn't.
Oh, it means yes, the ones you don't like and the ones that don't like you. So, that's the meaning of they use the word, what was the word? Swajana. You know, those who are similar. Yeah.
Are there sometimes social considerations that...
I'm saying if they're political, then
yeah,
yes.
Okay, yeah, of course.
But then, you know, it's not that you're sitting there and really enjoying yourself. You're talking and just being part of the scene, so it's not that you're, you know, you're just nibbling on things. Because generally those things, nobody's anybody's friend, so everybody's only nibbling. Yeah. 44. "Just see my arrogance, Only Krishna can adequately know and describe your good qualities. But at least I am convinced that the Supreme Lord has descended to this world only for the sake of you. You were wondering this morning about the principle of how ignorance was pervading everything, if there was goodness and passion also. There's your example. You know, walking is going on, but in total ignorance. So, yeah, so.
Speaking of
this,
that's an obvious one.
Yes. Yudhishthir refutes Narada's praise, 45 to 57. Now, beginning with Yudhishthira Maharaj, each of the Pandavas, as well as Draupadi and Kunti Maharani, will take their turn to refute Srila Narada Muni's arguments. So, doesn't always work out. Sri Parikit said, "For a moment, Dharmaraj Yudhishthira remained quiet, and then he sighed as if embarrassed." You know, it's like he says it. At last he spoke, followed in turn by his brother's wife and mother. Hearing his own praise embarrassed Yudhishthira, or so it seemed. Closer to the truth, however, is that he took this exaggerated praise to be false and thought that Narada was teasing him. In either case, Yudhishthira felt sufficiently moved to sigh audibly, even in front of his mother and younger brothers.
You think that Narada Muni starts to get a little bit dejected by the whole project he's got going on.
No, because it's all about the Lord and the devotees. So the point is he's glorifying, but in the refutation that they're going to be glorifying someone else. So it works out. That's not. Yudhishthira said, "O crest jewel of brilliant speakers, Lord Hari has no mercy for us. We cannot remember any mercy has shown us, even after we consider this for a long time." By calling Narada an eloquent speaker, Yudhishthira subtly accused him of distorting the truth. In Yudhishthira's opinion, proof that Krishna blessed him and his brothers with special favor cannot be found. 47. If ordinary materialists see the many calamities that have come upon us, their faith and their inclination to serve Krishna are likely to wither. In text 47 through 56, King Yudhishthira refutes the idea that the Pandavas possesses Krishna's mercy. Simple people believe Krishna's devotees never suffer misfortune. Yudhishthira says that when such people see the Pandavas' extreme adversities, this faith will be spoiled. Yes. But since he knows that the opposite is true, that by hearing about Krishna's loving dealings with the Pandavas, people gain faith, Yudhishthira qualifies his statement with the word eva, as if. Right. So he says that, you know, it's likely, or if, but it's not that it's actually a fact. Yeah. This would surely cause us great distress, for we have dedicated our life and breath only to him. We would suffer like embodied creatures without food, or like fish deprived of water. Pandavas do not resent having been subjected to so many troubles, but they feel responsible for diminishing the faith of other devotees, and this makes them sad. Only the force of Krishna's affections keeps the Pandavas alive. 49. Therefore, on the pretext of arranging a sacrifice, I begged him, "Dear Master, please show how the fortunes of the devotees and the non-devotees differ." Yudhishthira did not undertake the demanding Rajasuya Yajna for the power and fame it would earn him. He and his brothers were untouched by such material motives. He wanted only to help the world better understand the glories of Krishna and his devotees. Therefore, O Lord of Lords, let the people of this world see the power of devotional service rendered to your lotus feet. Please show them, O Almighty One, the position of those Kurus and Srinjayas who worship you, and the position of those who do not. I guess Shishupal would be in the category of those who do not, right? Srimad Bhagavatam 10.72.5. Many people are ignorant of Krishna's position, falsely believing him to be an ordinary person. Thus, Yudhishthira Maharaj's actual motive in discharging his duties as king was to establish the supremacy of Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the real purpose of the activities of the Pandava, and for that matter, the Mahabharata as a whole. Right? So it doesn't come out that clear. That's why then the Bhagavatam was spoken. Because then you can see from the Pandava's activities, it was all about Krishna. Right? The mood was about Krishna, the activities were connected to Krishna, so everything was Krishna. But in the Mahabharata, because there's so many stories in between, three quarters is auxiliary stories, that you may miss the point. Right? Because when something's repeated and there's a continuity, you start to catch. But when something's said and then so many other things happen and it's said again, you might not make the connection between the two. Right? Fifty to 51. By this sacrifice, all people will see the wonderful assets that belong to your devotees in this life and the next. Opulence is all pure and utterly distinct from material assets. Then, gaining absolute trust in you, people will worship your lotus feet, become ever free of misery and fear, and achieve happiness in all respects. And so the thing is Yudhishthira Maharaj can tell the difference between material and spiritual assets, but it's not necessarily the common person. Right? So he's pointing out if there is all this opulence and everything, the people will see that those who worship the Lord have all this nice facility, and therefore they'll gain faith, and then their activities will direct towards Krishna. But that's because of his vision, therefore he's seeing like that. Right? Because otherwise, then, they may or may not make that distinction.
Can we say that they are very advanced devotees, the Pandava, but they are very much concerned by other people?
Because they're kings, so their business is to protect the citizens. So you see, he's worried about just the common person. Because right, the great personalities, they can distinguish themselves. So whether anybody's setting an example or not, that doesn't matter.
Can you say that when a devotee is very, very advanced, more he is advanced, more he is concerned by other people?
That's there, yes. That would be there. That would be there.
Even if there is no chatiya duty?
Yes, that would be there. Then it's a matter of the preaching. So that's what he's concerned with. But even as a duty, that's naturally what he does.
Yeah. For him, like, duty and compassion go together.
Because then his duty and his compassion, but as a devotee, then there's that further consideration.
Yes.
So, in other words, the citizens are well taken care of, but then they have that devotional attitude. It's like Duryodhana, his citizens are well taken care of, but you don't hear of a devotional attitude, but you hear of the residents of Hastinapur that they are there.
Yes.
You know, that are connected with the Pandavas. So that's the whole point. So if they're connected with the Pandavas, you know, in a favorable way, then they're dear to the Lord. But like Duryodhana and them, they weren't, so then they're not so much. People tend to be strongly influenced by the example of their leaders. The Pandavas fulfilled their sovereign responsibilities perfectly. By their devotion and precise care with which they carried out the Rajasuya sacrifice, by the perfect justice of their administration in this life, and by the exalted position among the demigods they were sure to attain in the next. The Pandavas inspired the innocent people to follow the path of devotional service to Krishna. Everyone could see the extraordinary wealth and power of the Pandavas was untainted by material faults, because that wealth and power was intended only for the service of Krishna. 52. Now our non-devotee enemies have been destroyed, our kingdom returned to us, and our grief made greater than ever before. After the Rajasuya sacrifice and the Kurukshetra war, Jarasandha, Shishupal, Duryodhana, and their allies were all dead, but in fact their existence had been annihilated, in that even fuller sense, because they were never to take birth again. Right?
Yeah.
Right, so... So it wasn't just, okay, they removed here and then they'll come back next life and harass you, you know? Not get rid of me so easily.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, is that they had all, you know, gone back to Godhead or, you know, gotten liberation or something. You know, so there's not going to be any problems at all. Right? You know, so that's pretty complete. And although the Pandavas, after long years of suppression, were free to rule, in Yudhishthira's opinion, they had been happier when struggling against one threat of destruction after another. Right? Kunti made that point. Mm. 53, it is our fault that many saintly persons met their demise, including venerable teachers like Drona, Bhishma, and sons like Abhimanyu. This is why gaining the kingdom brought no happiness for the Pandavas. Most of their noble relatives, many of them saintly devotees of Krishna, had been killed in the conflict for sovereignty. Yudhishthira blamed himself for these deaths, since the war had been fought to install him on the throne. 54. The company of those devotees of Sri Vishnu is more desirable to us than life itself. Deprived of that association, we can no longer find any happiness. We enjoy the pleasure of seeing Sri Krishna's lotus face only once in a while, when after long times absent, he visits us on some business. Because that's what they were contriving, how to get Krishna to come, but then their point is he only comes because of that.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so it's just some business.
Yeah.
You know, so they're looking at it there. No, Krishna takes the excuse on business to come visit them.
Yeah.
But they take it the other way. He only comes because there's some business. He's not really coming for us.
Yeah.
Like that. Krishna did return to Hastinapur a few times after the Kurukshetra War. That's when Yudhishthira invited him to attend the Ashwamedha sacrifices. But these few visits were far too short to allay the pain of separation. The Pandavas suffered most of the time, because now they didn't have the Krishna there, and they didn't have these, you know, Bhishma and Drona, Vidura was gone, all, you know, all these great personalities. 56. The Yadavas alone are his true friends, Sadbandhu. Living always with them in Dwarka, he is always busy satisfying those dear and supremely fortunate friends. Bhagyavato Priyan. So now he just visits us, but he lives with them. So, you know, who's the fortunate one here, right? Until now, Sanatana Goswami has confirmed that Krishna is the topmost form of the Lord. Hence, part of the Pandavas' greatness lies in the fact that they lived together at one time with the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, they bemoan their present abandonment by the Lord in favor of superior associates, a theme readers are all too familiar with by now. The Pandavas echo the recurring sentiment that union is superior to separation. In this case, it is the Yadavas of Dwarka who reside together with the Lord, and thus receive the full extent of his love and mercy. After all, Sri Krishna forsook Vrindavan, Mathura, and Hastinapur to live with the Yadavas, thus designating them alone as his true and supremely fortunate friends. Narada might suggest to the Pandavas that Krishna will soon finish his business and return to them, because to Krishna they are dearer than anyone else. No, Yudhishthira replies, the Yadavas are even more dear. Krishna very much favors the Yadavas simply because they are the most exalted members of the Lord's own dynasty. Moreover, the Yadavas are endowed with the priceless treasure of pure love for Krishna. Therefore, Krishna goes out of his way to keep them always happy. Yudhishthira reasons that since the Pandavas are enjoying Krishna's company and the Pandavas are not, the Yadavas must be more favored. Right? Because now, if Krishna had been there when he visited Narada Muni, then it would be hard to use that.
Yeah.
But they would probably still say, he's only visiting us, he's going to leave and go back to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? From time to time, you have observed him carrying messages, driving chariots, and doing other services for us. But he does these things only to absolve himself of his debts to us, destroy our sins, and protect our religious principles. In addition to acting as Pandava's messenger, charioteer, and general servant, Krishna also offered them advice as a royal counselor and killed irreligious miscreants on their behalf. But in Yudhishthira's opinion, the impartial Supreme Lord never acted out of preference toward the Pandavas. These were simply formal dealings meant to uphold Dharma. So now he's using that as the angle, is that the Lord's equal to everyone, so therefore he only did these, because it's upholding Dharma. Yeah. If it wasn't upholding Dharma, he wouldn't have been here. Bhima refutes Narada's praise, 58-59. Yes?
Does Yudhishthira really think like this? Because they were quite close with Krishna, maybe not like Arjuna, but among friends, usually you're more sure about the relationship.
Okay, the child's at home, right? Yeah. But he likes to go out and play with his friends. And he's there, he's laughing, joking, and everything like that. And so the mother's seeing this. One, she's happy that the child's happy, but then there's that idea that he's happier with the friends than he is at home, because he doesn't necessarily laugh and joke as much as when he's at home. Does that work? You understand? Because you're saying you're confident about the relationship, but it doesn't mean that one doesn't think this way. Does that make sense? So in other words, because you're dealing with people, then there's always then they think in all these different ways. Facts are one thing, but the point is that, because the point is here, because in the story then you're going up and showing the greatness of their position, but then another position is greater. But then, how are you going to explain that it's greater? Okay, here. Let us say, when, what is his name? I don't remember his name. He was the king who was married to Urvasi.
Purura.
Yeah, Purura. So, now, when in that, there's a natural time to explain the nature of women. Who does it? Yeah. Because if someone else had done it, you might think it's biased. So therefore, if you want to point out the higher mercy of the other devotees, you just said it, then you might think otherwise. But here, then the devotee themselves is saying it. So no one can complain. You know what I'm saying? That means Yudhishthira here will not get, there'll be no Vaishnav aparad for him saying that we actually aren't getting the mercy. Right? He's not criticizing himself, he's just showing a different perspective, which is also perspectives on how you would see it as mercy. Just like before, we're seeing it as mercy that the king and his citizens and all those greatness is there. But then they'll just switch that and look at it from another. Oh, but he is impartial. He's just doing his duties and establishing Dharma. You know what I'm saying? So they just take a different angle of vision. So, which is a bona fide angle. And the other, what Narad Muni said is bona fide. So all of it remains proper. But then this way, then you can shift to the next devotees. As in a light, in as light a mood and as happily as Narad Muni's doing. Right? And then everybody remains in a position of being in their position as a devotee. Does that work?
So Maharaj, this means that the Pandava and before the other devotee, they are making the Krishna's mercy first and then their own position in second. Own relationship with Krishna.
Yes, yes. So, in other words, for them, they see that the residents of Dwarka are more fortunate than them. So they're going to compare themselves to them. But what we see here is that they've been compared to others. So then they're in a greater position. Right? But in their mind, comparing to the Dwarka Bhaktis now, then they're going to be greater.
It's mainly about the position, the quantity of mercy. Mercy is the main thing.
But it's also what you count as mercy. It's just like when the gopis were looking at Krishna, right? And they would blink, which is a nimisha, which is the shortest amount of time that you are consciously aware of. Mm-hmm. What was their opinion of Lord Brahma?
Yes,
he didn't do a good job. He made eyelids that blink, and so then you can't see Krishna for that one nimisha, right? So you know, it's just like you know, if you want to say a short time, in a blink of an eye, it will be like that, So here is, but that blink of an eye to them, now that was a calamity. So that's the thing, you're dealing with people, so then they can, have these different opinions. And they're all correct. That's the fun part.
Yeah. So somewhere it states that to them it was like a lifetime of Brahma or something. I seem to remember.
Yeah, okay, sure, but whatever. It was were not pleased. They think the demigods are better because they don't blink. So, right, so they're more fortunate. No, demigods don't blink. That's how you know they're demigods. That's understandable. So. But they don't blink. Their garlands don't fade. They don't blink. That's how Damayanti understood who Nala was. Because she just went up and looked. Because they did, she just went, and also the garlands. So the garlands were perfect, and they don't blink. So she just kept going until someone's garland is a little bit getting old. Because they've been there for, this is not early morning, so it's the daytime. And he blinked. So as soon as she saw that, then she garlanded. So in their case, then they're thinking, why do we not blink? So Damayanti was very happy. Nala was very happy he blinks. The demigods were, but the demigods all praised and gave, blessings because of her, just her focus. Except Kali Raj, he was not overly pleased. Yeah, so that's the thing. Is one situation, someone else interprets it totally differently. So that's why also you stay with those who basically interpret in a similar way, or at least compatible way.
Yes.
Yeah. Otherwise, then it's a problem. Everything you do, the other person doesn't like, then it's a big problem. Yeah. So Bhima refutes Narada's praise. Sri Parikkhit continued. Then Bhima, the bosom friend of the Lord of the Yadavas, Narma Suhrit Tama, laughed loudly and said, "Please listen, my dear disciple of Sri Krishna." The word Narma denotes natural joking between intimate friends. Bhima was so intimate with Krishna that Bhima could pretend to discern in Narada's character the faults the sage had acquired in Krishna's association. For example, Narada must have learned from Krishna how to cleverly juggle the meaning of words, just as Krishna always juggled words himself.
Can we say that Bhima's relationship was more intimate than Yudhishthira's Krishna?
Yeah. Whether that would be, you do have the element that doesn't have the necessarily that parental aspect. So maybe in that way. Krishna is the original source of illusion, the guru of all clever deceivers. His acts are fathomless like an ocean. We have little faith in the many crafty things he says and does. Doesn't he have all sorts of motives? Maya means magic and also means material nature, the source of illusion in the created world. Krishna is the source of Maya in both senses of the word. In Bhima's opinion, Krishna is too unpredictable and deceptive to trust. Sometimes Krishna acts just for his personal enjoyment. Sometimes he manufactures illusions out of mere curiosity. And sometimes he uses his wit to intentionally bewilder his devotees. In any case, his motive is never simple affection, and the games he plays are not real. Since Bhima and his brothers are experienced men of the world, they are not going to put any trust in such behavior. Arjuna refutes Narada's praise. Sri Parikit said, "Then, dear mother, my grandfather Sriman Arjuna, the intimate friend of Krishna, dejectedly spoke, sighing again and again. Bhima was Krishna's Narmashaka, the Lord's bosom friend, right? Because bosom friends will say all those kind of, right? Because then being like equals, and they deal in a certain way. You know, they can joke and say about the other person, ah, he's this. You know, so that's, so you see that in the way Bhima deals. Right? But Arjuna was Krishna's pranashaka. That is, Krishna and Arjuna are dearer to one another than life. Right? So then they're more, that's more intimate. Arjuna was glorious. Sriman, blessed by the goddess of portion, because his intimate friendship with Krishna. It was painful for Arjuna to think about his friend he now rarely saw. 61. Blessed Arjuna said, "O godly Narada, the great mercy your beloved Lord supposedly bestowed upon us has in fact become the cause of our sorrow." Arjuna's relationship with Krishna is more intimate than Bhima's. Whereas Bhima discounted Krishna's kindness as a mere pretense that served other aims of his pastimes, Arjuna had to acknowledge that Krishna's affection for the Pandavas was real. According to Arjuna, Krishna's intentions when he drove Arjuna's chariot and served the Pandavas in various ways were sincere, yet somehow the results were usually contrary. Right? So it's sincerely done, but then it gives the opposite result. Mm-hmm. Not sure if it'll come up here, but like the example is given, that if there's darkness, you know, you can kind of see, but not well, but if now there's suddenly some bright light where you can see everything, when that light goes, it's even more dark. Yes. Right? So that's how Arjuna's looking at it. 62-63. Swayed by dry speculation, concerned only with their own dharma, Bhishma and others on the field of war fiercely attacked Lord Sri Krishna, piercing his armor and flesh. Lord Krishna, the wielder of the Sudarshan Chakra, tolerated for my sake those repeated attacks on his divine body, although I tried to stop him. In text 62-70, Arjuna explains how Krishna's good intentions often brought the Pandavas to grief. Right? During the 18 days of battle at Kurukshetra, even though Krishna had promised to take up no weapons himself, warriors like Bhishma more than once attacked him because Krishna wanted Arjuna victorious at all costs. Krishna never turned away from these attacks, but repeatedly exposed the danger of injury his tender body, more precious to Arjuna than his own, so that he's being attacked by Bhishma and others, then that would give more pain to Arjuna. That he's driving his chariot, that's a great mercy, because we're saying he's rendering the service, but then the problems that come up to Krishna are even greater. You know, that would give them more pain. Right? He was a messenger of Duryodhana, didn't deal properly with them, so all these will give more pain. Bhishma and the others who tried to harm Krishna justified themselves on the grounds that they were following principles of righteous warfare. On the battlefield, a Kshatriya should be ready to kill even his father or other relatives. End quote. But since Krishna is the aim of all true religious principles, the attack on him were unrighteous. Arjuna says that the warriors who attacked Krishna did so because their understanding was dry and impersonal. They reason that since Krishna is the absolute truth, he cannot feel pain when pierced by weapons. So attacking him is not wrong. This means, Arjuna implies, that they were not pure devotees and had no real understanding of the sweet honey taste of Sri Krishna's lotus feet. So they were only looking at him as the absolute truth. That's his speaking. Is that because they're looking as the absolute truth, therefore, and he's come to establish Dharma, therefore by following Dharma, then everything's fine. Yeah. Right? And so since it's a pastime on the battlefield, so therefore then Kshatriyas, they fight to their best of ability, and in trying to, cause trouble for the warrior, then they can harass his charioteer, his horses, his chariot, his umbrella, his flag, everything like that. Does that make sense? So it's all part of the religious principles followed by the Kshatriyas.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
It seems that very few people recognize Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
That's the whole point, is the personality aspect that's not there. That it's not that God's not a person, but it's not about him as a person.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Because Paramatma, it's understood he's a person. But it's not about him as a person. It's about him being the supreme absolute truth, the all-pervading, the controller, the judge, the witness, like this. Does that make sense? So that's how they're looking at it. So then in that position, then naturally these things won't be a problem, since he's beyond the material world. And because of that, from that platform, reciprocating with them, it doesn't bother him. But Arjuna, it'll bother him, so then there'll be that kind of reciprocation there. You know what I'm saying?
Can we say that in Vaikuntha there is an element of Paramatma consciousness at this whole old river?
It is personal, but at the same time it's not as personal as it can be, seeing that the original nature of the Lord is Krishna. So therefore, the realization is not as full. Mm-hmm. Once it comes to that really full stage, then one considers much more. So they're considering him as a person. So yes, in one sense, it's like that, but it is on the Bhagavan platform, because it's about him pleasing him. But still, it's that greatness is there. So the yoga maya is less, right? It has to be something, otherwise then, with Arjuna, then you remove all that yoga maya and then it doesn't work out so good. Yeah, so there has to be some.
Yeah.
But it won't be as much as in Goloka.
Yes.
And it won't be as much as in Gokul. So it just keeps getting... The blows Krishna received in battle seemed to penetrate his skin and draw blood. The attacks were earnest and forceful enough to have been fatal for a human fighter. More likely, however, the so-called blood flowing from Krishna's transcendental body was actually perspiration, an ecstatic symptom of his compassion for his devotees. Krishna's purpose was to show the world how much concern he always feels for his devotees. So he'll reciprocate on the other thing, but at the same time as that affection for Arjuna, it won't bother him. Because at the same time is how much force is one of those arrows compared to him as the supreme absolute truth. So from that point, it's not going to be a problem. But what his concern is to, see to Arjuna's victory. So you're going to see, because they're reciprocating like that, he'll respond that way. But at the same time, is he's with Arjuna and responding in that way. So he's able to do both at once. Right? So they see, based on their level of realization, Arjuna sees on his.
So Krishna's purpose was to show the world how much concern he was. But how does that work out?
Because no matter how much difficulty he's going through, he's still driving the chariot.
Yeah, but generally the people think that he's been hurt, no?
up to this point where it's being mentioned by Arjuna, did that ever cross your mind?
No.
Okay, yeah. So then.
Yeah.
So everyone just sees him as the charioteer, and oh, they attack Krishna, and this is that, so you just go on with the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Arjuna is then thinking about, you know, his friend and all the trouble he's going through. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, just like Bhima's thinking, ah, you know, he's our friend, you know, so he's always juggling words, so he's just doing that again, you know. You know, that's part of the relationship. But Arjuna then being more intimate, then it's a different perspective.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. So that's the thing, it's not that one's right, one's wrong, they're all correct.
Yeah.
But there'll be higher levels.
Yes.
Arjuna tried to dissuade Krishna from facing these challenges. He told Krishna, "My Lord, since you promised not to join the fight, why are you advancing to kill Bhishma? Why are you accepting the blows of Bhagadatta and others while I am here to protect you?" Speaking like this, Arjuna grabbed hold of Krishna's feet and tried to stop him from attacking Bhishma. Ultimately, Krishna's sweet will is supreme. He is Chakrapani, the wielder of the Sudarshan disc. With this eternal weapon, he could have effortlessly warded off all attacks and killed all opponents whenever he wished. But he bore the blows of various enemies just to increase Arjuna's fame. 64. "Even today, O Brahmana, as I remember those incidents, I cannot remove the arrow of grief from my heart. How then can I feel any happiness? Acts that bring pain to a dear one are not a sign of compassion or love. When I refused to kill Bhishma, Drona, and others, Krishna, the best of wise scholars, taught me something to induce me to go ahead and kill them. Hearing only the literal meaning of what Krishna taught may please dry scholars, but to us whose life and soul lies in glorifying pure devotional service, those instructions by the Lord give great pain." Okay, so just taking it as, okay, how to get out of the world. But then the point is these are all devotees. And he's looking at it from that devotional and the relationship point of view. So, yes, it all has to be done. But so then that's just giving him pain because he's working in that personal platform.
Yes.
Right? But to get out of the material personal platform, then the philosophy talks about that, about no emotions and these kind of things. Does that make sense? So he's pointing out that all these situations just create more pain. You know, the pain that Krishna was going through for his glorification, and that all the relatives that are there then having to be killed and all that, but not because they're relatives, because they're devotees. Right? Because he's not complaining about others. Bhishma, Drona, and others. You know, Duryodhana's name's not on the list. So that's not a problem.
And Maharaj, except Duryodhana and his close friend, everybody else was a devotee.
Not necessarily, because some of the kings were supportive. You know, Jayadratha and some of these others, I don't think they were. But it would be who would be closer to Duryodhana. But
if I remember well, in the army of Duryodhana, it was also Krishna's army.
That's there. They were part of the army. I don't think they were the whole army. I think it was an Akshahini.
Yes.
So that's so that means 10 other Akshahinis were the other kings.
Yes. 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 That is in many devotees.
Yes. No. There would be many devotees there. Yeah. Like that, because we see is generally when the kings were. Purified by Arjuna's arrows, then they can appreciate Krishna's position, so they went to Vaikuntha. And if not, their purified state, seeing the Lord, then they'll get Sayuja. Yeah. But in any case, they're all benefited. But you get the idea that a majority went back to Godhead, you know, by the way Prabhupada's explaining it. The Upanishads convey the essence of Vedic knowledge, as Srimad Bhagavad Gita conveys the essence of the Upanishads. Various exalted sages became the receivers or rishis of each of the Upanishads. But Bhagavan Sri Krishna chose to speak his own Gita directly to his friend and devotee Arjuna. Because Arjuna is too humble to think himself great and is disappointed by Krishna having left the Pandavas, he does not consider himself a favored devotee of Krishna's. Therefore, he tries to deny the transcendental value of the Gita. This is only a ploy, however, to distract Narada. Arjuna's argument here is not valid. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches pure devotional service, and he chose to speak it to Arjuna because Arjuna is one of the purest devotees. Quote, "This Gita Upanishad, Bhagavad Gita, the essence of all the Upanishads, is just like a cow. And Lord Krishna, who is famous as a cowherd boy, is milking this cow. Arjuna is just like a calf, and learned scholars and pure devotees are to drink,
Ah, so this is the hidden meaning.
Yes.
Ah, here we go. It's on the next page. I just have a blank page. Right, 32. Yeah, okay.
Hard to drink.
Oh, maybe that's it. That's the milk. It's white as...
Oh.
Like that. So they're supposed to drink the milk. The nectarian milk of Bhagavad Gita, Gita Mahatmya 6, right? So we made a mistake there. We were dealing too much with the impersonalist and we thought it was the Brahman, but no, it's the milk. The nectarian milk of Bhagavad Gita. Even carefully studying the purport of those instructions has not made me any happier. Rather, his words only make me remember how he deceived me. According to all the Vaishnava commentators, including Sridhar Swami, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, and Baladev Vidyabhushana, the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is that Krishna is the supreme truth and that the perfection of life is to serve him with devotion. But in the ecstasy of separation, Arjuna reads the purport otherwise. He thinks Krishna spoke these instructions just to trick him into agreeing to kill his teachers, Bhishma and Drona. 69-70. No one is dearer to me than the supreme Brahman, Krishna, with his all-enchanting beautiful form. He has given himself to me, with complete faith in him. He is the reservoir of pure unconditional mercy, the upholder of his word, the best of well-wishing friends, the omnipotent Lord of all. Here, Arjuna admits his firm trust in Krishna. This solid faith is the reality underlining Arjuna's ecstatic consciousness. His contrary expressions of apparent distrust are countercurrents of secondary ecstasies, which increase his pleasure, the pleasure of his beloved Lord and the pleasure of the Rasika devotees like Narada, to whom he divulges these feelings. In this verse, Arjuna states four reasons for his complete trust in Krishna. First, Krishna is merciful, unconditionally. Second, he always fulfills his promises, such as the one he made to Arjuna before the battle of Kurukshetra. Name bhakta pranashati, my devotee never perishes. Third, he is the most reliable friend and benefactor. And fourth, he is the supreme Lord, able to do anything. Remembering these qualities of Krishna and his exquisite beauty and the intimate friendship he kindly shared, Arjuna confesses that for him, Krishna is everything. But for this very reason, Arjuna cannot bear to consider that Krishna would intentionally deceive him into killing his teachers on the pretext of giving him spiritual instructions. Nakul and Sahadev refute Narada's praise, 71-72. Sri Nakul and Sahadev said, "Yes, Sri Krishna gave us steadfastness in the face of many dangers. He arranged for the doom of all our enemies and for our success in the Ashwamedha and other sacrifices. He expanded our fame, kingdom, and pious credits, which others could hardly hope to attain. But, O godly Narada, we do not deem this evidence of his mercy. Rather, he gave us real mercy when, in the festival of many great sacrifices, he had arranged, he delighted us by accepting the first worship. Now he has cheated us by going away. So how can we continue to live? Before, O Brahmana, at least we had the sight of him, so difficult to obtain." Like their brothers, Nakul and Sahadev judge Krishna's mercy on them by whether or not he gives them his personal association. they could think themselves fortunate only as long as they could be with him and see him at the Rajasuya sacrifice and on other occasions.
So they say he's given the mercy, but then he's not there, so where is the mercy now?
Mm-hmm. Draupadi refutes Narada's praise, 75 to 81. Sri Pariket said, hearing the words of the Pandavas, Draupadi was overwhelmed with sorrow. Calming herself with great effort, she spoke, crying in a choked voice. Shri Krishna, Draupadi said, so many times my intimate friend Shri Krishna saved me from shame, and so many times he killed wicked rascals like the Kauravas. I thought he would always show us mercy, but now my father, brother, and sons have all fallen in battle. Nonetheless, I don't lament, for by nature I accept whatever he may desire. But I had hoped that on one pretext or another, he would arrange for my desires to be fulfilled. Duryodhana and Dushasana and their friends had tormented Draupadi with their unspeakably wicked behavior. Draupadi knows that Krishna alone saved her and her husbands from this abuse. Although her husbands, by their arms, had killed their many enemies, it was Krishna's inconceivable potencies that had drawn the doomed warriors into fratricidal combat, and Krishna's will that had sealed their fate. Even after Draupadi's father, Drupada, her brother, Drishtadyumna, and her five sons, headed by Prativindya, had all perished at Kurukshetra, she hoped against hope that Krishna would somehow make her happy again. 79. After my family members were killed, Sri Krishna personally sat there at my side and expertly consoled me with persuasive arguments. I always drink the immortal nectar of those charming words, so pleasing to the mind, and the smiles that went with them. With his sweet, compassionate words, Krishna had filled Draupadi's heart with a new hope. Despite the material disaster and loss, Draupadi could be consoled by recalling how Krishna had sat and talked with her in concern, and how attractive his words and smiling face had been. 81. Even so, it is my misfortune that he no longer comes here. So how, dear sage, can I think he has shown me any mercy? Right, because it's in the past, so then they're always thinking, like that.
It appears that the higher in the relationship we go, the more devotees emphasize the Vapu aspect of the Lord. So how can we match this with Vani and Vapu? Because Vani, knowledge they all have, but they all talk about personal association, which they miss.
Well, it'll be like here, you have Vapu and Vani. I mean, you have these different aspects. Means that there's that element of the intimacy because one is willing to follow the instructions even if one doesn't get the personal association.
Yes.
So there's that kind of surrender.
Yes.
But at the same time, because of that surrender having associated with the Lord, the form of the Lord, then separation from that then is even greater. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the point is they're serving in separation here. But the point is it's separation because being with the Lord is so dear.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So it's natural that in separation you'll talk about when the Lord was present, because that's how the separation is being experienced. Because otherwise, if it's just, philosophical, then when he's there or not, he's the absolute, he's always pervading, he's home. So it's just that because of the element of being able to follow the Vani, therefore they get the association of Vapu. Right? And having had that, then there's that feeling of separation.
Kunti refutes Narada's praise, 82 to 88. Sri Pariket said, Mother Kunti, for whom the sight of Krishna was life, seemed tormented with sorrow, remembering how Krishna had at times shown his mercy, and at other times not. She then spoke pitifully with tears in her eyes. Like her sons and their wife, Kunti is a transcendental soul, blessed with the full mercy of Krishna. This is the truth, no matter what she says. The ecstasy of separation, Vipralamba Bhava, impelled her to complain sorrowfully as if an ordinary woman. Parikit Maharaj qualifies his description here by saying, Shokarta Iva, as if lamenting, to help clarify the real situation. Because here, the lamentation is due to material, material attachment. The dare is due to spiritual attachment. So then, you know, it's not a problem. So it's not material attachment, but it will appear the same way. Because originally, you know, all personal dealings come from the spiritual world, not from here. Right? The pastimes may be enacted here, but these are the natural moods of the spiritual world. So therefore, because this is a reflection, that there's not a problem. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, if you have like a set and it's all mirrors, so there's reflection of the tree, but if there's a tree, it's not a problem also. Right? Because they look the same. You know, but only with proper, with knowledge, then you can tell the difference, what's a real tree and what's not. Like that. Shri Prita Kunti said, I had no husband to protect me, but Krishna always interceded just in time to save me and my sons from calamity. For this, I understood that Krishna's mercy on me was special, greater than even his mercy on his mother, Devaki. Queen Kunti, in her famous prayers to Krishna, compares her relation with Krishna to Devaki's. O Rishikesha, master of the senses and lord of lords, you have released me and my children and your mother, Devaki, who was long imprisoned and distressed by the envious King Kamsa from a series of constant dangers. My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, I was about to say, from cannabis.
What does that mean?
From cannibals, yeah. Okay, that makes more sense. From the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile in the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought. And now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashwatthama. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.23.24. Srimati Kunti here implies that Krishna's mercy on her differs from his mercy on Devaki. Krishna saved Devaki from Kamsa's persecution, but only after Devaki had been imprisoned for a long time. Moreover, he released Devaki only once. Even when freed, she was still unhappy because Krishna had not rescued the first six of her sons from murder by Kamsa. But Krishna saved Kunti repeatedly, together with her sons. Krishna always came to the rescue without delay. When Duryodhana tried to feed Bhima a poisoned cake, when Duryodhana tried to burn the Pandavas alive in a palace made of lac, when the brothers had to face man-eating rakshasas like Hidimba, when they were cheated by the Kauravas in gambling, and on numerous other occasions, Devaki had protectors other than Krishna, including her husband and other Vrishni heroes. Whereas Kunti, Krishna was the only shelter. Kunti therefore considered her own dependence on Krishna more complete. 84. But now the thought that Krishna is merciful to me never enters my mind. For everywhere in our home and the homes of our neighbors, I hear this loud mourning of the women whose relatives have been slain. In the aftermath of the devastating battle at Kurukshetra, Kunti cannot even think to herself that Krishna has special affection for her family. Certainly, while speaking to others, she is reluctant to say anything about Krishna's mercy. Therefore, deprived of seeing him, I beg Krishna to take away our wealth and give us more calamities, to bring him again within our sight. Though her family has won back their kingdom, Kunti still sees no happiness, because they no longer can see Krishna. They were happier when struggling against one danger after another,
Thus Kunti prayed to Krishna, "I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again. Foreseeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths." Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.25. A devotee who has seen the lotus feet of Krishna is guaranteed liberation from the cycle of birth and death. But the Krishna conscious devotee sees also that this liberation, apunar bhava darshanam, is nothing compared with the pleasure of serving Krishna in one's own relationship with him. Right, so the difficulties that one gets, that's nothing compared to the pleasure of serving Krishna. So, because Krishna would come when they'd have problems, the main point wasn't getting rid of the distress, it was actually getting the opportunity to personally serve Krishna. Mm. That's what was more dear to Kunti and the devotees.
We had the discussion recently about the problems that devotees face, and we also brought the point out that there's the taste of devotional service that's stronger.
Okay. No, it's good. It's just
compared to the materialists who also have problems.
Yes, they have problems, but then...
But then they get light.
Yeah, and then when it's relieved, there's a moment that they're happy, but then disappears. But for the devotee, that devotional service remains. And so the calamity is not great. Right? You know, for us, then it's a different view. So we can see here is those that associate with the Lord. That taste is so great that when he's not there, then it's a big problem. You know, but for us, it's not necessarily
that's
a big problem.
Everyday life.
As you bring one of those, how do you say this? Balaclavas or something? To put it on with your eyes.
Yeah. I told him before the class.
Yeah, you look up and all you see, it looks like, oh, there's his banditos. Krishna gave the Pandavas their kingdom, free from thorny opponents. Now thinking the brother satisfied, he has abandoned us and resides in Dwarka. Right? Because he feels, no, he's taking care of them, then he's gone. So I have given up hope that he will ever come back. Now I think his real mercy would be my quick death. My last thread of hope, that Krishna is always compassionate to his friends and relatives, can easily break if I simply consider how strong he's attached to the Yadus. Yudhishthira reached the same conclusion, that the Pandavas cannot hope to compete for Krishna's attention with the Yadavas of Dwarka. The Yadavas, as Krishna's family members, have first claim on Krishna. They are his uncles, cousins, and sons. And from Kunti's point of view, the Yadavas, much more strongly than the Pandavas, are connected with Krishna as his loving servants. Kunti directs Narada to the Yadavas. Oh, time is up. Okay, so we'll stop here.
Can we say that before?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I just wonder what's the
Yeah,
stage.
No. It's just that by habit, I can't stop it this time.
Sneezing's gone away. He wants to. Sneezing went away, so he wants
to.
Yeah,
now I'm fired up.
Okay. Good. Okay. Take advantage, right? Okay. In the fire of their bereavement, the Pandavas were unable to see any validity whatsoever in Narad Muni's praise. They therefore pointed Narad Muni in the direction of those truly favored by the Lord, the Yadavas. So you see, Yudhishthira started with that. And then Kunti ends with that. You know, so then that's a... Therefore, go see the divine Yadavas, the Lord's most beloved associates, who live immersed in a vast, unequaled ocean of joy. My Lord Narada, you know very well how great they are. What can I tell you about their glories? Right, so it wasn't that so many things were said. You know, so it's just she mentions that, you know, what can I tell you? A special note here is that the Pandavas do not resent the Yadavas, nor express any envy towards them. As pure devotees, they seek only Krishna's pleasure at the expense of their own. And thus,
and thus reason that if the Yadavas are indeed more dear to Krishna than they, better Krishna resides there. Kunti thus recommends Narada to go to Dwarka to follow the example of the Yadavas' devotion and achieve the mercy of their association. They are the best of all the Supreme Lord's exalted devotees, including Brahma and the other demigods and the heavenly planets. Garuda and the other Parshads of Vaikuntha, and Prahlad, Hanuman, and other Vaishnavas in the world of mortals. Kunti thinks that because the Yadavas are absorbed in ecstasy, Narada's ecstasy will certainly increase in their company. Remaining with Kunti and the Pandavas, however, will only drag him down into misery, because they're lamenting in separation. In case Narada suggests he can derive enough satisfaction simply by hearing about the Yadavas from Kunti and her sons, Kunti reminds him that he already knows the residents of Dwarka better than the Pandavas do, since Narada had visited Dwarka many times. What can Kunti tell him what he does not already know? He should just go to Dwarka, where he can see Krishna's full mercy.
Because otherwise he can say he'll stay and hear from them.
Yeah.
So she just deflects it and just says, you know better than I do, so what's the need to? So what others would do in many, many verses, then she just did in one verse.
Narada sees the Yadavas in Dwarka, 90 to 98. Sri Pariket said, O mother, O wife of Lord Yadavendra's nephew, Yadavendra Bhagini Suta Patni. Okay. The exalted sage Narada swiftly arrived at Sri Dwarka. He entered the inner city, repeatedly offering prostrate obeisances, and saw from a distance the fortunate Yadav heroes. The epithet Maharaj Pariket uses to address his mother, Yadavendra Bhagini Sutapatni, is significant. Srimati Subhadra is the sister Bhagini of Sri Krishna Yadavendra, the worshipable lord of the Yadav dynasty, and Uttara, the wife, Patni of Subhadra's son, Abhimanyu Suta, gave birth to Maharaj Pariket. Therefore, if the Yadavs are as fortunate as the Pandavas describe, Pariket's mother also shares in their blessedness by being a member of the family. He beheld them sitting at ease in the blessed assembly hall Sudharma, ranked in order of importance. They sat resplendent with the ornaments of their own bodily beauty, and were further adorned with garlands of parijata. Right, because Krishna brought the parijata. So.
It's just an interesting point. I've heard several seminars on Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and this is where they all start from, like when Narada enters Dwarka.
They don't deal with the first?
Huh?
They don't deal with the
Tapasana? No, nothing before that, just this part.
Oh, okay. Hmm. Yeah. Because then you have all the nice pastimes and the Krishna and the queens talking and like that. Yeah, because this also going through this, then you have to balance all these. It's you know, because so this one will be inspired, because this I think is the last stop in his in the whole program here. Also, you know, how long are the seminars?
2-3 days.
Yeah, so then you have to, you know, just get down to
brass tacks.
But now it's a different perspective. It's a whole different thing.
Perspective
going through the
whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh.
Season starts.
Hmm. Those termites. Yeah. It means that this is the. So it must be somewhere out there that there's millions of them coming out of the holes and stuff. And then the fun part is then you see Yeah, I mean, at least I've seen it other times. When they're all coming out, then you got tons of frogs all just sitting around. You know, it's just like,
where did they come from?
It's like piles of lobsters or something. Buckets of hollow. Yeah, you don't get better than that.
I understand.
Verses 91 through 96 describe the splendor of the Pandavas. Narada found the Yadava rule is convened in the hall Sudharma, which had belonged originally to the heavenly kingdom of Indra. Under the Yadus, however, the glory of Sudharma had increased. Now even more than while in Swargaloka, it manifested Sri, the opulence and favor of Lakshmi Devi, the supreme goddess of fortune. Yeah, you know it's getting cold, because as soon as the sun just goes, immediately it just gets cold. You know? Free from envy and petty rivalry, the Yadus sat happily in order of seniority by age. Although they were all fabulously rich and powerful, they had no desires for anything material. Their treasure in life was the prize of their dynasty, Sri Krishna. They accepted the trappings of royalty only because these were suitable for their service to Krishna and gave him pleasure. The heavenly hall Sudharma and the priceless jewels, garments, and parijata garlands added nothing to the natural beauty of their transcendental bodies, which shone with splendor of their pure love for Krishna and for one another.
And so here you see, again, they have all the opulence and everything like that, like the Pandavas had. So when you're getting into this aspect of that pure devotion, then again you see it all there. You know, so it's only when you're dealing in the... within the material world, you see one is that aspect, but you also have that aspect of the renunciation, right? Because in the renunciation, then there's the point of getting out of the material world. But once you're in the spiritual world, then naturally there's going to be all opulence and facility.
They were being regaled by festive song and dance in the most celestial style, and praised by bards and splendidly tasteful words. Okay. So it comes up once. His gopi, he means splendid, but if it was, what was his name? Kusakrata. Mm-hmm. It's always splendid. The music, dance, and drama performed in the Yadu assembly were divya, equal to those heard and seen in Indra's swarga, and also Ati Divya, equal to those in Lord Narayana's Vaikuntha. All perfections of this world and the kingdom of God attended the Yadus like menial servants, right? Because Dwarka then being in Goloka, then it will have these elements to them. So whatever there is from here, whatever there is from Vaikuntha, that will all be represented in Dwarka. The Yadavas laughed among one another and exchanged clever jokes and quips, the effulgence of their bodies surpassing that of the sun, their personalities full of charm. Although the light radiating from the bodies of the Yadus was more brilliant than the sun, that effulgent, unlike the sun globes, did not pain the eyes, because of the Yadus' very gentle and pleasing natures. 94. Many kinds of precious ornaments decorated the Yadavas, and even some of the most elderly members of the assembly had obtained new youth by constantly enjoying the nectar of Sri Krishna's lotus face. Now, if you publicize that one, you might get a lot of people to start taking up Krishna consciousness.
You're with it.
The perpetual youth of even the oldest among the Yadus is affirmed by Sukadeva Goswami. Quote, even the most elderly residents of the city appeared youthful, full of strength and vitality, for with their eyes they constantly drank the elixir of Lord Mukunda's lotus face, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:45-19. So Indra has his nectar of immortality, but it is not as great as this, right? It means that, you know, you're young, it'll keep you young. But here, if you're old, it'll make you young.
So it's even a good deal.
Better, yeah. 95. Surrounding Maharaj Ugrasena, the Yadavas glowed brilliantly. As with reverent eagerness, they awaited the arrival of Sri Krishna. Right, so they're all there beforehand. Right? They're waiting for him, and they're enjoying each other's association. That's the nice thing. It's not that they're sitting there and, you know, it's not like going to some meeting or something like that. Here it's that, you know, they're enjoying Krishna's association. You know, at the meeting you try to come once it's started, but here you want to get there before. You know, because it's...
That's different.
King Ugrasena sat on his throne in the midst of the assembly, served with his white umbrella, yak-tail fans, and other royal emblems. Reflecting the king's imperial potency, all the Yadava princes glowed brilliantly, like many suns in the sky. But even though commanding so much material power, every one of them wanted nothing but to see Krishna and be with him. Krishna joined them every day in their assembly, yet every day they waited his arrival with great eagerness. He was their devata, their only object of worship. 96. I don't know if that's it. Is there more of this? No, that ends this part. We have another one of these? Or?
I was just in contact with Jagannath Kirtan, and he's going to send some copies to print in, and I'm going to pick them up on Thursday.
Okay, so we'll have on Thursday. Okay, because I don't think this
that
we have left will make it through.
No.
Another class.
You have to prepare many questions.